Hello once again, and welcome to Heroes in Our Midst. I have been eagerly awaiting today's episode because our guest was handpicked by, well, me. I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Koop, and I am beyond honored to get to host this podcast project of ours. Every week, I share someone's story, as told to me by them. And our goal is to get to know them through their story, to get to know the human behind the performance. Now, when we started this whole podcast journey back in the summer of 2020, the founding group of heroes, Dr. Adrian Leslie Toogood, Donna Harris, and myself, decided that a good place to start would be to each choose our heroes. Adrian chose one of her mentors, well-loved and world-renowned sports psychologist, Dr. Cal Botterill. Donna chose her husband, an incredible coach and difference maker in sport, Kylo Harris. And for me, it's my high school volleyball coach, Shannon Kaler. Should you know Shannon? Well, I think everyone should, but you probably don't. She was an amazing athlete in her own right, but her name was never in lights, and she's okay with that. And she definitely is a hero. And not just to me, but to so many young volleyball players who were fortunate enough to have her guidance and to truly be cared for by her in the decades that she coached. When she got her first job teaching high school phys ed and coaching volleyball in my little hometown of Steinbeck, it was life-changing for me. You see, the word opportunity is defined as a set of circumstances that makes it possible to do something. Well, that is what Shannon gave to me, opportunity. So I know her place in my story, but no question, she has an amazing volleyball story all of her own. Long before she coached, she was a volleyball player herself, also from a small town, and also overcoming the odds to do what she did. So perhaps she saw a little bit of herself in me from the very beginning. And here is her story.
I started in Flin Flon, Manitoba in the north. Yeah, I started sports in grade 8. I was a little scared in grade 7 to try out because I was very small. So I did, up until grade 7, I did very odd things like ballet and Highland dancing and synchronized swimming. And then grade 7, it was like, oh, there's sports out there. And I kind of took grade 7 year to kind of grow into them. And grade 8, I started, loved every sport. But volleyball had a special kind of place in my heart. And so that carried me up into high school, and it was an awesome run up in Flin Flon. And I just remember, we had a coach who he pushed us hard. He taught us a lot of discipline and teamwork. And if I remember correctly, our first one or two days of trials, there was no volleyballs. It was like time mile. Let's see how fast you can run. Running lines in the gym and all kinds of probably those duck walks that are illegal now. And he just wanted to see who the hard workers were. And so I still think in grade 10, I want to say maybe I went in for one serve and came out because I was about 5'3". So luckily I had a big growth spurt, big in perspective, maybe 5'7". But and so I was lucky to play with a good group of girls in high school. A teammate went on to play, John Rito went on to play at U of W. And so, yeah, we had a good run, but it was interesting being from a small town because, you know, we would show up at a tournament and they'd say, well, where's Flin Flon? Never heard of the Copper Queens. And you know, we didn't get to a lot of the big tournaments because, you know, it took us on a bus 8-10 hours to get to the city. So wow. Most of high school was on a bus, whether it was for other sports or volleyball. And so I have fond memories. It was great. Hated the long bus rides, but the friendships and we had my grade 12 season was pretty good. We went a long way. Didn't go all the way to the championship, but yeah, it was a great, great time.
Now, you're talking about Flin Flon. Now, in order to make those trips and make those connections, and you had this coach who worked you really hard, did he make those connections for you? Like, was he the one who brought you down, you know, to the city to tournaments and that kind of thing?
Yeah, he would have planned the tournaments. Like, we always went to Brandon. Other than that, we went to, you know, Swan River, Thompson, more the northern part of the province. But yeah, he got us some exposure in Brandon. And along the way, that was also a bit of a road trip. We'd do a few exhibition games along the way. But, you know, I could be wrong, but I don't remember playing a lot in the city.
Yeah.
And it was a different classification system back then, right? With the double A's, we played more rural schools. Sure. We weren't going up against the big city schools. So, I remember going to the city and just being awed by, oh, who are all of these girls and, well, the schools they play for. And, you know, they were a class higher than us. So, Yeah, there was a bit of a wow awe factor.
Yeah. So now you mentioned Dawn, who played at University of Winnipeg. So you had someone who really made it off your team, but you were also recruited to play at the University of Manitoba. Maybe bridge that gap for us. How did you go from, you know, loving volleyball, having a decent grade 12 year, to actually being recruited to play university ball?
Well, as I remember, I had a friend encourage me to try out.
Okay.
I wouldn't necessarily say like back then we were recruited. Like I remember it was an open tryout and the gym was full of people. Whereas now it's the, you know, the numbers are smaller because they've been hand selected and recruited. But a friend encouraged me, said you should try out. So I was like still in that bubble of little old me from the north and all these girls. And I just put them on such a pedestal of, oh, I don't know if I can walk into that world. And so I decided to go for it. And I remember being up in one of the gold or the brown gym and just looking at this field of girls and going, I don't know. And so I think when cuts were made, I didn't even check the list. One of the girls I met in trials called me and said, you better get over here. And that was Nikki Gasperdi, who was a great player at U of M for many years and one of my very best friends. But yeah, it was just, again, that, you know, coming from the north to south, to me, the gap was miles, and maybe it wasn't so many miles. And it was a group, an amazing group of women that I got to be a part of that were mostly third, fourth, fifth year players. There was only four of us rookies that made it that year. So once the dust settled, it was awesome. I was very happy and privileged to be able to play with those girls.
Yeah, amazing. So that obviously took you to a whole nother level of volleyball. How many years did you play university, and what are some of your, do you have a best memory from like U of M days?
I played 2 years. I was injured both years, so that played a part in me deciding to kind of shorten my time there. But memories. My first year, like just getting to play with, you know, a Jamie Hancherick and, or not necessarily play with, you know, cheer on, but occasionally play with Jamie Hancherick and a Sue Borowski and a Bonnie Gessner and, you know, all the so many more great girls. And we made it to the national final that year, and we lost. And we were a team of, I think we had one girl, maybe 5'10". The rest were 5'9" under.
Wow.
And I remember we played Saskatchewan in the final, and they were trees. They were just huge. And, you know, they had block, and our girls would be scraping the ball off the floor. And we put up a good fight, but it was just an amazing memory for your first year coming from the north and playing with this amazing group of athletes and getting all the way to the national final. Like, what an experience. It was a wow moment for sure.
And who is your coach at U of M?
First year was Sue Seaborn, and second year was Donna Badock.
Okay, so you played for two female coaches.
Yes. Yeah, and there were a lot of men, and it was in that era too where coaching was taking a bit of a twist where they're pretty intense coaching.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed playing. Definitely, I would say, a bit of a different twist than playing for a male coach.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, I would say, always softer. The expectations were there and whatnot, but I enjoyed playing for them both, and I don't know if it's because of that or I just always knew I wanted to coach. And my third year off, I assisted with the Junior Bison team a little bit.
Okay.
And from there, just when you love the sport and you like working with kids.
Well, and your path took a turn because of your injuries. Now, I think a lot of people listening and a lot of young athletes might be interested to know, how disappointing was that for you? And if you don't mind sharing, what kind of injuries did you have? Were they really sort of game ending, or was it just that you now decided to move on?
No, not career ending. They're both torn ligaments in the same ankle. So it was like a 6 to 8 week out the first season and same in the second. And part of that kind of snowballed into, well, I can't crutch across the university to get my classes. So things were getting behind. And, you know, I just decided at that point, I'll play senior women's with a bunch of ex-university friends and focus on my school, because, you know, I could just see how I was getting behind and already having to sign up for, a session in the summer to kind of keep up. Cause my goal was I wanted to be done in my 5 years, for both degrees. I didn't want to stretch it out.
Right. Yeah. And so then you did, and you moved on, and you finished your degree, but your senior women's team, I mean, that has changed a little bit. I think young athletes don't understand really, senior women's was some big time volleyball, and there is still some very good senior women's teams, very good volleyball, by the way.
Yeah.
But I think even then, like, a lot of women played, and that was pretty hardcore.
Oh, for sure. There wasn't as many tiers back then. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the couple that were at the top, there were a lot of very talented, Oh, I'm trying to remember. Mary Dempster. I think she played.
She was national team. She even went to the Olympics, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
So a few like her, and then, yeah, and girls I played with, girls from the other universities. So, you know, you'd get some awesome volleyball still going on, and then kept your foot in the door, but maybe not the big time commitment. Yeah.
Then you transferred that into coaching and you became a teacher. And was your first job in Steinbeck? Was that your sort of right out of university?
Yes.
Okay. And were you happy that you got a job in a small town? Were you hoping for that, or because of your, you know, upbringing, or were you kind of like, oh boy, I got to move this Mennonite town to Steinbeck. What am I going to do there? I mean, Ormiston, you married a Mennonite. But...
Yes. Yeah, I did so get a lot of, what kind of name is that?
Yeah, Ormiston coming into Steinbeck. I was in grade 10 at the time, and you know, you were this young, like we all thought, this university player coming to coach us. We were pretty excited. But what was that like for you?
Well, it was, I guess, first and foremost, it was exciting to get a job because, you know,
sure,
there weren't a lot, you know, teaching jobs go through eras of there's a demand, there's no demand. So it was kind of that time where it was harder to get a job.
Yeah.
So I think I'm assuming my university volleyball on the resume helped. Was I looking for a small town? Not necessarily, but I was honored to come out and got an education on the way out. My grandma drove out with me, and I, as we were passing the Blumenauer car, I'm like, what is that smell? Because growing up in a mining town, there was no farming around. I was like, oh my, what am I getting myself into?
So, there are a lot of those smells around Steinbeck.
Now I'm used to the smells. I know what they are. But it was great, and it was only a term job when it started.
Right.
But after meeting my first group of girls, I remember saying to them, we have unfinished business. Like, I don't know where I'm going to get a job if I'm back, but I'm going to somehow try and promise to coach you the next year. But then it worked out. The lady didn't come back and I got to stay. So that was just a highlight for me right there, that I got to stay and keep working with my girls.
Yeah, for sure. And that first group of girls that you had was a strong team. Well, double A school at the time. When you sort of came into that, I was 1 year away from playing for you. But I remember you being this tough coach. At least that was our perception. Like, oh my word, she makes you run and the warm-ups are so hard. But from your perspective coming in, what were your thoughts of these young athletes and coming out of the university system? Sometimes it's difficult to make that transition. What was that like for you?
I think the first thing when I started teaching there was, okay, I want to coach the volleyball team. And I got told, oh, we have two coaches already. And I went, well, don't I get priority? Because I work here. So the two that had signed up agreed to assistant with me. So that made me happy. But I came in and I was like, well, I got to get these girls working and work and work and work. And they're not that great. And, you know, and coming from, you know, a university senior women's perspective to high school, I thought, well, I got a lot of work to do here. And I remember, you know, our season, we were having actually pretty successful. It was rolling along and we're at school assembly on our way to provincials. And my coworker said, well, you know, the boys and girls are off to provincials and one of these teams has a better chance than the other of winning a medal. And I remember looking going, really, the boys aren't that good. But he was talking about my team. Yeah. So we won the silver medal that year. But I still, I mean, taking nothing away from the team we played, because they obviously were awesome. But I always felt like I did not prepare my team in the right way to possibly win, because I didn't see them there. I had no perspective that they were, and they were all grade 11. Well, the majority, besides I think two, were grade 11 girls. So they were young. And yeah, it was a big learning curve for me in the talent that I had.
Yeah, for sure. And so then the next year enters, well, that's when I got to know you especially well. I finally was in grade 11 and I finally got to play with this amazing group of grade 12 girls. And for you as a coach, and I just, but I'm going to go back a little bit because part of my story, I don't know if you remember, when I was in grade 9, I clearly remember you coming to watch me play at some point. Now, I don't even know if you would remember that, but you were the one who mentioned, I think, to my mom or dad or someone about this provincial team idea. And for me, I think that was the door that, I mean, it got slammed in my face a few times. So thanks for that. No, yeah. So you set me up for some disappointment. But
yeah, sorry about that.
But okay. But I mean, I'm thinking that coming into a small town and coaching these girls, like, did you have in mind, like, did it strike you when you met me or, you know, and you encouraged me to go try out for this team and I thought you were nuts but I'd never heard of this before. Mm-hmm. You know, that must have been exciting for you to be able to start doing that for a whole nother generation of girls to maybe get to an experience like you had.
Yeah, Yeah, I think it was always important, you know, when the talent and the drive and the work ethic was there. And I know I can remember back always going to watch at some point in time the grade 9 girls.
Yeah.
Because we had the one school,
right,
besides some of the rural, that fed in, and usually the other schools, someone was playing this time at junior high, whether it was Kleefeld or Bloomart. So I could see a big majority of the girls that would come next year, just to give me an idea of what I had coming into the system. And then it was kind of for that same reason I often, back in the days, a different system again.
Yeah.
Was midget, grade 9 and girls. I wouldn't coach my grade 11 and 12 girls in a club season.
Because
I said, I've had you for a number of years. Like, the basics should be there. So I would always take 9, 10 for club. Work with them so they would feed into the program. So to me, it kept the program going. And it by the time the program started and got going, some of those girls then I would have coached for 4 seasons. So by the time they were done grade 12, I feel like, you know, if they're going to make it, they're going to make it. Like, you know, their skills should be where they at, and it's, you know, it's going to come down to their mental ability and physical ability, how much they want to put into their game and how far they want to go.
Yeah. So I've often wanted to ask you this question. And when I started and when I played grade 9 and 10 and tried out for these provincial teams, everyone told me I was too small. I got cut from 3 provincial teams and you kept telling me to go. What did you look for in your athletes? Like, what was it that made you keep, let's say, encouraging someone like me? Go again, like, do it. That makes me think that in some ways you were looking for something different than a lot of these other coaches were.
Well, yeah, there's a few points in there. Undersized, back in my day, I wasn't necessarily undersized.
Right.
Girls are a lot bigger than they were. to one of your other questions, when I would look for setters, they're touching every second ball. They're running the show. They're making hard decisions. I looked for someone who was very agile, good athlete, good head in the shoulder, and could take the heat of being a setter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that would be something that I saw in you. And you going to other coaches, I had the luxury of having you in my practice. And in those days, we practiced a lot, and we did individuals, and we didn't necessarily have a league. So we practiced like 4 times a week and tournaments every weekend, as opposed to possibly other systems that had leagues, games during the week. They didn't practice. Like, we spent, 1 year I calculate, 200 hours just in a volleyball season, right? So I got to see. And I remember, I may get this wrong, but I remember having a conversation, I think, with Vic Lowen once, and he said, yeah, I'm the guy who has the reputation of cutting Michelle Sawatsky. And I remember saying, like, okay, this girl, to me, I always describe you, you had this ability to raise people above their own level. Like, you played outside yourself and you knew what to say to everyone, and you could make them believe that they were better than they were, and you raised them up. And I said, you just don't get that in athletes. Like, your mental ability and your strength was something that I think only some of those coaches making cuts would have been able to say, wow, once they had spent time with you. And I think obviously down the road they did. So in a tryout where you try out for a few days, number one, I think there's a, you know, city factor to a bit, because they've seen these girls, they're not necessarily traveling out to our small communities to watch, right?
Yeah.
So they have familiarity with them, and size. You know, some people realize size, but I mean, you can't coach some things that size is more important than, right?
Yeah. And you always told us that too. And I know that was one of the reasons we were successful at high school, because we just, I don't know, we weren't very big. Our whole team wasn't very big,
no.
And how successful we were. Now, you went on long after I was gone, and you had much more success along the way. Maybe give us a little rundown. Like, just tell us about your coaching career in high school. I mean, you coached girls for a long time, but you also coached boys. So maybe run us through a little bit more of your story and how that kind of went for you. And maybe even give us some highlight athletes along the way, because I was not the only one that you helped get to the next level. There are a few jerseys hanging up in the gym of other girls and guys that went on to play university.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm dusting off the brain
here. Cobwebs.
Yeah, there's a lot. Primarily varsity girls, but I think it was near your grade 12 year too, I did some boys. In fact, your husband.
Right.
In a club season. Because the boys often, there wasn't really anyone doing boys clubs, so they were begging me for a while. So the 1 year, I think, it just worked out. Okay, I'll take them. And and then after numerous years of varsity, I did the odd year, just maybe a little bit of a break. I did JV girls. 1 year I had to do JV girls and boys because there was no coach.
Wow.
Always club teams. And then fast forward a number of years, and I had the I don't know. I'm trying to think of the right word. Challenging yet rewarding coaching job of working with my son. So I volunteered. It was kind of later on when I wasn't head coaching for a while. So I assisted with his junior high years and then took head coached his grade 9 club team and his grade 10 junior varsity season with a group of boys. So that was neat experience doing boys. It's different issues. Boys get over things quite quickly. They can be really upset, but they get over it quite quickly. So yeah, that was awesome. And then I had a phone call from you. Shannon, do you want to help me with club girls? And
oh, please.
I'm back again. So yeah, that was awesome. And then I continued on with those two girls for their last 2 years of high school. And 2014-15 was a wrap. Coaching was over.
That was a wrap. Looking back, Shannon, what do you miss about coaching?
All my life, I've just loved being in the gym. I miss being in the gym, miss working with the kids. And I mean, when you're coaching, you have to take 12, you know, up to 12 personalities and try and get them all on the same wavelength, right? Mm-hmm. Pushing for the same goal. And that, to me, that was very challenging. And I loved working and pushing girls and seeing them push themselves harder than they knew they could.
Yeah.
And seeing them come together and just learn some of those life skills. To me, you know, certain groups, you think back and say, wow, like they bought into the journey and they stayed on it together. And those girls are the ones, you know, I still keep in touch with and get letters from and hugs from and phone calls like you for coffee from. And just seeing girls have confidence in themselves and not being scared to push harder than anyone said that, you know, they're capable of. And they're going, wow, I can do it. Like those aha moments that they get.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's always so rewarding to see them succeed.
It's pretty cool, hey?
Yeah, for sure.
Names like Renelda Friesen, some might remember, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, there's more. Kim Funk played 5 years at University of Manitoba. Ken Bentley loved you for those years that you were there. I'm sure he was sad when you stopped coaching varsity girls. But what was it, do you think, that made Shannon's athletes have a chance? What would you tell a young coach? I mean, I know why I asked you to you know, coach with me. I wanted you to head coach, to be honest, but you wouldn't. So what are some ingredients? And maybe you've even mentioned it, you know, the 12 athletes, getting them to mesh and all that stuff. But would you have anything that you would say to a young coach directly who's listening and say, this is what you can't coach without? Maybe a quality or even just as something practical, like how you would run your drills or that kind of thing.
Often remember hearing myself like asking the girls, did you work your hardest?
Yeah.
Did you give your hardest in that drill? No. Could you have done it hard? Okay, we'll start over, do it again. Like keeping them disciplined and on track and making them, I don't know, just focus that they were worthy of being successful. Some of the girls to me didn't own their success. Like and confidence was something that some girls came in with and some girls didn't. And I talked with many coaches about this. You know, when you've got that athlete that has the physical ability, but they put them in the game and, you know, they're a practice player, they're not a game player. And I said, I don't know, near the end of my coaching, I thought, wow, like, I don't know if you can teach or improve confidence. I think you can instill it for a game, a moment. But it still came back. Like I remember getting a letter from a girl, thank you for believing in me when I didn't believe in myself. And yet at provincials, she ended up getting All-Star Award. Like it wasn't that she was like, oh, say nice things to me. I need, she literally just never felt she was up to where she should be.
Huh.
And so, you know, I don't know, just working with kids to see their potential. And there's so many, I don't know if I could narrow it down to one thing. Like, I think when you look at your team, it's one thing for one team, one for another. And some kids you just don't reach. Some never get on the same page. And you know, like Julie Luckman, Kim Funk, Renelda, like some of those girls, they had fire. Like I remember Julie Luckman, like 1 year I thought, well, I'm going to tell the girls where they stack up. And I remember saying to her, like, you're probably 10 right now. And she looked me straight in the face and said, I'm going to be in 6. And I said, well, good for you. That's exactly the drive I want. And then on a serve receive, I had her stacked in a corner. She practiced better. Sooner or later, she was back. Like, you know, like kids that just have that fire, I think some kids have the makings. You add some coaching and maybe some of them, I don't know, would have made it anyway. Who knows, right?
When I tell my story, I talk about how I don't think I ever would have made it if you hadn't come into my life. So if you hadn't walked through those doors, but you opened a world to me. Now, whether any technique you taught me or any of those moments were the key that was my success, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'll ask a lot of people when we do these conversations, mm-hmm. Do you ever think that you're a hero? I know when I asked you to do this, mm-hmm. you're like, well, I'll do it for you, but you know, what am yeah. I going to say?
Yeah.
How does that strike you when someone says, you know what, you're one of my heroes in my life?
Yeah, I think it's like you say, you don't see yourself that way. I mean, I know I've been appreciated by many girls, you know, by the cards and yeah. you know, they pop in town, come ring my doorbell. So yeah, that's I mean, good. You know, you've made connections and people have appreciated what you've done for them. But I think also, you know, I was a phys ed teacher and coaching was part of my job. It yeah. helped that I had a passion for it and experience in it and I loved it. And I had kids that wanted to play for me and work hard. And did everyone that played for me have the same journey? No. Some of that would have been my fault. Some of them, their lack of effort combination. But it's interesting how people see each other, right? And sometimes mm-hmm. it's neat to have different perspectives from. So if I can be a hero to you, I'm happy. But do I think I have a hero crown? No.
I think you represent a lot of high school coaches who don't even know where these kids will end up mm-hmm. or what impact you'll make. And mm-hmm. do you think you changed in your years of coaching from beginning to end?
Yeah, I think going back to that comment I made earlier mm-hmm. where when I came in and I was like, well, these girls aren't that great. Well, those girls, and you would know, you hopefully you weren't one of the ones puking after running lines, but yeah, like physically, how physically hard I made them work and yeah. and the discipline, the teamwork. And I think part of it was, you know, the season before it was more of a relaxed volleyball atmosphere in the type of coaching they had before. So mm-hmm. my coaching, number one, was without some of that physical part was different. But yeah, I was pretty hardcore and, you know, and then, you know, I started, you know, realizing, okay, these are kids and you gotta, you know, ease it up a bit. And you know, it's and something I think I did pretty good early on was remembering it's their season. Ah. I had my season. I played my season. And, you know, as I went on a little bit more, I even for some teams, once you read your group, you'd say, okay, do you guys want to play to win? Is winning that important to you? It's your season. Or do you want to play fair time? Because, you know, you'd see these heartbroken faces. And some years the levels weren't, of ability wasn't mm-hmm. that great. So you could get more people in. And some, but unfortunately in high school volleyball, if you're not winning, you're not getting invited to tournaments and you're not making provincials. And so, you know, you can, in club season grade 9, everyone play. You paid, you play. But yeah. high school, it had to be more cutthroat. And I think, you know, that as I got older, got harder for me to see girls so sad they didn't get to play. But yeah, I think, and then when you have your own kids, you realize, I feel bad. Like, but you have to be still keep in mind it's your job.
Yeah.
And you've got 12 to, you can't change it for one person. Yeah. There's still 12. So yeah, definitely I would say I got slightly easier, especially yeah. in the physical training. There weren't as many pukers in the later years. That reminds me, I think it was your grade 12 year. I remember having a pregame talk at Dakota Collegiate. I think it was the tournament where we got snowed in and stayed at my grandma's. Yep. Remember that
yep.
one? And giving the big speech and having all these eyeballs. I mean, I think probably my own fault for the first time in coaching those girls. And I said, let's have fun out there. And I remember a bunch of the girls looking at each other like, did you say fun?
Are we allowed to have fun?
Yeah. Yeah, so fun. The word fun came in a little bit more as the years went by.
That seems to be a common journey for many coaches, yes. I think. Okay, well, we're going to ask you a couple of really like rapid fire questions here.
Okay.
What is your favorite sound?
Sounds of water. Waterfalls, waves crashing, rain. Very relaxing. I love that sound.
What is something that you've struggled with that continues to affect you now that no one would know looking at you?
Nerve pain and noisy eaters. Those drive me insane, but most people don't know.
You know, Shannon, we never touched on that. You said... Does your husband know that?
Yeah, he does know.
So Shannon, we never even touched on this whole part of your life and mm-hmm. one of your greatest struggles, and you mentioned it, so I'd like to ask you about that a little bit, is you talked about injuries early in your life, mm-hmm. but later in your life, and something that really affected you was your nerve pain and some injuries to your back.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I guess from... about 2003 to about 2007 in there, I had two back surgeries. And there wasn't an injury that caused the first one. I was sitting actually at next student's ex-player's wedding and just couldn't walk then for a few, 6-8 weeks, and then had one surgery and things didn't work out perfectly, issues, had a second one, and just slowly been building my way back up. But that was a struggle because my whole life was sports and running and jumping, and I had to say goodbye to that and say, now part two, second part, and now I've found other things that let me sweat hard and feel like I'm active. So it's all I'm very grateful for where I am now.
Well, you know, it's amazing. I mean, you make that sound pretty easy, but I know there was a long time in there, but you even coached for a time when you were dealing with some pain.
Oh yeah. My son's junior high years. Yeah. I assistant coached because I couldn't hit balls and do a lot of that. And when I was with you, I didn't really do a lot of hitting. I had to modify my behavior a little to fit in. And my last few years with the girls, you know, I chose my behavior and I chose my consequence, but I love doing it because it just was like the old days were back.
Was worth it.
Yeah, it was worth it.
Do you think that your time as an athlete, your time in sports, maybe even dealing with your injuries and all of that, mm-hmm. and maybe all your work as a coach, do you think that attributed to you being able to deal with the pain and be where you are now?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, my own personal opinion is I think when athletes are trained to work so hard, push yourself, be disciplined. Yeah, I've been told by many doctors I have a high pain threshold, but I also, I just think there's someone worse. Like, come on, suck it up, you know, until you get to a point where, okay, now listen, sit down, and like I wouldn't give up at the first little ache or pain, right?
Right, yeah. Right. I'm just going to say that maybe your little ache and pain would be a lot bigger for some people, but you pass that on to all of us who were your players, the mental strength and we knew when we played for you, mm-hmm. we just go, but it made us stronger. And I truly believe that. It's always been an amazing thing that I have watched you walk through. What is a quote you love?
Quote I love. Well, this is one I've talked about many times with many teams, but I also really like it. And it's, I don't even really know who said it, but and I may not get it exactly in the right words, but the main idea of it is, it's always good to have an end to journey towards, but in the end, it's really about the journey. And, you know, at the end of volleyball seasons, you know, I remember sitting with a group disappointed. It was a Final Four, and, you know, we probably should have won, but things just, and I said, you know, we can really sit here and be sad, but let's think about our journey, our whole season, all the things we want, you know, and it's great to have that speech when you win the gold medal too. But you know what? It's just like sometimes it's like life. It's things go so fast. You have to stop and just think, be grateful for all these little moments, like outside sports too. Like, you know, like I was on a volunteer trip with a friend and we had got at the top of Machu Picchu. I said, take your shoes off. We're putting our feet in the grass and let's just sit here and let's think about, you know, all the people in our life and the journey that got, like, just slow down and think about your journey. Be grateful because, you know, how many years ago was it when you were in high school? Ooh. Look how time flies. Aren't we both still in our 20s and teens?
I thought so. Aren't we? Aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, favorite failure.
Well, one of my favorite things is music and singing. But my failure would be that, you know, my mother said, if you're going to sing, go in the bedroom and close the door behind you, because I cannot sing worth beans. Like, it's so bad. But I love music and I love singing. So probably not something a musician wants to hear. And even your lessons won't help me. Just saying.
Tell us about a book you would recommend to other people and why.
The one I always recommend to everyone. I loved it. It's a book called Left to Tell. And it's about the 1994 genocide in Rwanda.
Okay.
And it's from the perspective of a young woman. She was with seven others, and they, for 91 days, were in a closet in built in behind a local pastor's wall, and they hid out while people, like, in that 100 days, I think 500,000 to a million people were killed. And she could crack the wall. She could hear them calling her name. Her family was murdered and whatnot. And this basically is, she was left to tell, and she came, ended up, I haven't followed her through the whole way, but she ended up coming to America and she tells this story. And one of her lines in that book was, we kept waiting for someone to come and help us. And it was like the rest of the world didn't hear us. And it was with the Hutu and the Tutsi tribes. And just the way she writes this story, and yeah, they like turned standing in the closet to go to the bathroom, and 91 days in a cramped closet. Wow. And it's such a powerful story of those women, but it's also an eye-opener of what happened in the world. I don't remember hearing about it till much, much later.
Right.
And this was in 1994. Wow. So yeah, to me, it's just, it's not a big book. I like smaller books, but it was also a very, very good book.
Okay. Who are two or three people who influenced you and how did they impact your life?
Well, the first one that would jump out would be my grandma. She was a school teacher. So she was, you know, back in that time, she was a spunky little 5'1" Spitfire, and she was an elementary school teacher. And I remember her letting me come sit in her classroom. And we live 500 miles apart, right? She was in Winnipeg, we were in Flin Flon. So we'd come down to visit, and she would let me come sit in her classroom. And I remember after my second visit with her, I said, I'm going to be a teacher. Like, she's the reason I became a teacher. I lived with her during parts of my university days and traveled with her. And yeah, she was just spunky, fiery little Scottish lady. And even in her late 80s, she was teaching my boys science experiments and whatnot. And yeah, she just was a real influence. At one point, I was thinking, after my first year of university, I was thinking about quitting and moving north with a friend. And she said to me, Shannon, you need an education and you always need to have girlfriends. Those were, she goes, got to rely on girlfriends. And those are her two big words. And she talked me out of that. And wow, like you say, the right time and the right conversation. And
no kidding,
I went on to finish my education.
Wow. So a lot of us young athletes should thank your grandma. Anyone else?
I would say my mother-in-law. When I moved to Steinbeck, it was, you know, coming from a northern mining town down to here, it was, you know, just a little, definitely a change of pace.
Sure.
A lot of different things I noticed. And yeah, I met her and just the most hardworking, loving woman who, nothing was too hard. She made everything from scratch. She made her own laundry soap. And, you know, like, once she raised four boys, basically on her own because her husband was driving, he was on the road. And,
okay,
oh, you like the blueberry pie, you like the cherry pie, I'll make one for everyone. And, like, when I came into the family, like, my first experience there was pierogies. Love pierogies. Take a bite. Oh my word. What is in there? Because I was expecting potato and bacon and cheese, and I got dry cottage cheese. So yeah. And then my next visit, there was potato pierogies there for me. Like, she just, and with my boys, like, she never said no. They played soccer in the kitchen. The ball would land on the soup pot. Like, she just, family was everything to her. And she had the greatest faith, the biggest heart. And just, she just, when the boys would walk in, her face just lit up. And to me, she was just such a strong, strong, kind-hearted woman. I just remember thinking, wow. And one time she said to me, when one of the boys was a little cranky, oh, I feel so bad for you. And I said, you don't have to feel bad for me. I have a microwave and I have washer and dryer machines. And like, I'm not making my noodles. And like, I'm not working as hard as you. And she also was a big volunteer. And I really made me look into doing more volunteer work outside of, like, coaching was all volunteer.
Sure.
But I looked at it as part of my job. This was volunteering outside of sport that I got a lot involved with down the road.
Shannon, this has been just a treat for me. One thing I remember from high school very much that is very special to me is how much we hung out.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about the volleyball. You cared about your athletes, but as people. And I think that's a huge part of being a hero, is to care about the heart of the people that you work with and the people you associate with. So thank you for doing that.
And that is Shannon Kaler, my hero. Her presence in my life changed its course, and at one point, I think the only one who knew what my potential could be. And she didn't stop encouraging me until I went for it all. Thank you, Shannon, for coaching me, for believing in me, for pushing me, for truly seeing me from the inside out, and for giving of yourself for nothing in return, except, I hope, for the knowledge that I will forever be grateful. You truly are a hero in our midst. If you'd like to hear more stories and meet more heroes, then subscribe and come back. There's a lot more to come. Thanks.